girlfriends in the past.
I'm Joe Gomez.
The U.S. Supreme Court is sidestepping a major ruling on a hotly contested part of the Affordable Care Act. The High Court is not ruling on a challenge by Christian nonprofit employers to the law's contraception mandate. The law says female workers shall have health insurance that includes birth control coverage. This is USA Radio News.
Whoa.
The moment my son saw a redwood tree.
It's huge!
Is the moment I knew that for him.
You can't even see the top of that thing.
Even the sky has no limit.
There are some moments only the forest can inspire. Find yours at discovertheforest.org. Learn about forests near you and discover cool things to do when you go. Your moment is out there. Find it at discovertheforest.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Adopt U.S. Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
You've messed up your daughter's haircut. Do you A, get spiritual?
Mom, where's the mirror?
Beauty is within.
B, find the positives.
Less time blow drying, more time texting.
Or C, show empathy.
Mom, you really don't have
twinsies.
I kinda love it. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on adoption, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
A Harvard law professor says Christians have lost America's culture wars. Mark Tushnet says they should be treated like Nazis for taking a biblical stance on today's social issues. Tushnet says liberals should move aggressively now to take advantage of the current judicial landscape, which has swung to the left after the death of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. There's an honor in the surf for a slain U.S. Navy SEAL today. USA's Randy Fuller has details.
Surfers took part in a paddle-out tribute for Charles Keating IV in Coronado Saturday. Keating died in combat May 3rd while battling ISIS fighters in Mosul. Several members of Keating's family, friends, and fellow military joined the surfers to pay their respects to the fallen SEAL. I'm Randy Fuller.
Four people are dead after a small plane crashed less than a mile away from a Mississippi airport. The FAA reporting the plane went down this morning in Tupelo. It was headed to Virginia. This is USA Radio News. Breaking news online at usaradio.com.
Driving has a rhythm all its own. Don't wreck it with a text. Before you get behind the wheel, silence your phone. Or better yet, designate a texter. For more text-free driving tips, visit stoptextstoprex.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
The Coast Guard is suspending the search in the Gulf of Mexico for a missing cruise ship passenger. Samantha Broberg was reported missing from the Carnival Liberty on Friday as the ship was about 200 miles southeast of Galveston, Texas. The ship reported that video showed the 33-year-old woman falling overboard from the 10th deck at around 2 in the morning. The fight for 15 is resuming in New Jersey. Sarah Lee Kessler has details.
The Senate Labor Committee is expected to vote today on whether to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. The state's current minimum is $8.38. Critics say that's about 70% of what you need to live in the Garden State. Governor Chris Christie has said previously that raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour would hurt the economy and drive more businesses out of New Jersey. Sarah Lee Kessler, New Jersey.
General Motors is halting the sale of some SUVs and crossover vehicles after the gas mileage turned out to be not as good as advertised. GM says a data transmission error incorrectly labeled the fuel economy, causing the mile per gallon listing to be slightly higher than it really is. The affected vehicles will not be sold again until a corrected label can be printed and put on the cars. This is USA Radio News. Breaking news online at usaradio.com.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call Nami Hunterton at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. Nami Hunterton, the voice for mental health in Hunterton County. The weather today is mostly sunny with a high around 64, breezy with a west winds around 20 miles per hour. Tonight, it'll be partly cloudy with a low around 42, and southwest winds 7 to 10 miles an hour. Tuesday, chance of showers after 9 a.m. in the morning, mostly cloudy with a high near 64, southwest winds 7 to 10 miles an hour. Tuesday night, chance of showers, cloudy with a low around 46, southwest winds 5 to 8 miles an hour, becoming northwest winds after midnight. The chance of precipitation is 50%. Wednesday, chance of showers, mostly cloudy with a high near 64, north winds around 6 miles an hour, and the chance of precipitation is 40%. Wednesday night, more chance of showers before 9 o'clock. Temperatures around low around 46. And Thursday, hopefully it'll be sunny. Maybe. You're listening to the Hunterton Medical Center Hour. I'm your host, Larry Cartwright. And we are very privileged to have with us today two beautiful ladies who I happen to know both for a long time. We have Nancy Ramore and Christine Cochran. And I have a pretty good idea what you guys do, but I'll let you tell it. Nancy, what's your job at the medical center?
I'm the director of the community outreach department, and that really consists of grant-funded programs for individuals and families who have members with mental illness to support them and educate them in the community.
And that falls under behavioral health?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Christine, you jump around. You go from one to another. So what are you doing now?
Right now I am the director of acute behavioral health and addiction services.
Okay.
That includes the outpatient and acute partial program, adolescent program, and addiction treatment services. And I was the former director of the inpatient unit 2 Central.
That I know.
That's how you know me. I know.
Yes. You know, it's funny because I always ask people this, whether it's on the show previous that I do or this one, how did you get in this kind of line of work? I've had the prosecutor on a while ago, a month or so ago, and he was a licensed social worker who dealt with mentally ill people prior to becoming a lawyer. And I just found that very interesting. Other people have said, I don't know, I had two kids, a mortgage, and I needed a job. And this, I've been doing this for a long time now, you know. And that would have been me, only I had four kids, a mortgage, and car payments, and taxes. And so, but I was there a long time, too. So I was just curious. Nancy, how did you get into this?
Oh, my goodness. I think you asked me this the last time I was on here.
But I ask everybody,
It kind of evolved from not knowing what I wanted to do when I was in college to being a sociology major to taking tests that said, I like to talk a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
I would have found that hard to believe.
No, you're shocked. And what professions can you do if you want to talk a lot? So I went to, after school, I got a job at a mental health facility and realized I wanted to go for my counseling, my master's in counseling.
Right.
And from there, I realized that this is a population that I work very well with and I enjoy working with to really help to change the trajectory of their lives.
Yeah. You didn't want to sell jewelry like your cousin?
You know, no. I can't sell a hot dog at a baseball game. So I leave the selling to her.
All right, Chris. How did you get in this?
My background is nursing.
Okay.
So I started as a nurse. I always liked working with people. Just like Nancy, I like to talk to people. I enjoy learning about them, knowing what makes people tick kind of things. I also enjoy working with people with addictions, and that was a perfect opportunity because what I found was a lot of people, even on medical floors or any other backgrounds, they also suffered from mental illness. We don't recognize it. Sometimes you think it's an angry person, you know, and they're scared. But a lot of times they're depressed. They have chronic illnesses. And it was just a great segue.
A lot of times with your addiction program, you'll find people with mental illness interact, you know.
Yeah.
Some people who I've spoken to said, well, I did drugs because I wanted to be part of the crew, you know. Well, you know. And it helped, and others tell me, well, it helped with the pain that they were going through. It took away the pain, you know, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And it's just like people who, some people I've talked to who cut themselves, you know, they cut themselves to get away from the pain that's in their head,
right.
You know, because that pain is different.
Mm-hmm.
And a while ago, we had a person up in 2 Central at the hospital, and he said to me, can I talk to you for a minute after? I said, sure. So we went outside and we talked, and he says, I want to show you something. And he pulled up his sleeve on both sides of a long sleeve shirt and pulled up on both sides. There wasn't a half an inch of skin that wasn't scarred from his shoulder right on down to his wrist. And I was shocked. It was like, you know, I mean, I know people who cut themselves, you know, but it's like, you know, boom, boom, boom. His was total, the entire both arms, you know. And we talked for quite a while, and it was just amazing to me, you know. And
the reasons are so different for everybody.
Yeah. Yep, they are. They really are.
Well, you were saying too, Larry, 50% of people with mental illness have substance abuse, whether it's to relieve the symptoms, to help them calm down, to give them energy, to make the pain go away. And sometimes it's the chicken before the egg.
Right.
You know, people at times will start with early age, you know, dabbling, experimenting with the kids, you know, trying the drugs, the alcohol, and that. And that a lot of times will initiate the symptoms.
Yeah,
and
that's
you know,
true.
And, so, and, you, yeah. you know, and then you don't know what's going on with the patient. So a lot of times you have to figure out, you know, why are they depressed? Is it because of the alcohol that they're using, which is a depressant, or is it from something else? So you want to see somebody clean first before you can even start really diagnosing. Really a true diagnosis. Not that you don't treat them, but you would want to see what's really underneath.
It's just never ceases to amaze me, and I've been doing this almost 20 years now, and it just never ceases to amaze me the different things you can run into, you know, in different situations people are in or not doing or are doing or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, you know, people get discharged from the hospital. 3 days later, they stop taking the meds.
Hmm.
And when I teach a family-to-family class that NAMI does, and people go, why did they stop taking their meds, blah, 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 you know. And I'll often say to them, have you ever gone to the doctor and with an infection or flu or something, and he's given you antibiotics and he told you to take them for 10 days? How many took them for 10 days? Mm-hmm. If I had 20 in a class, maybe 3 people raised their hand. Why did you not take them for 10 days? Well, I felt better. Well, it's the same reason they have. They feel better, so they stop taking the drugs. Only difference is, in your case, it was the flu. In their case, it's mental illness. It's different, you know. Theirs is not going away. You know, yours did. But it's the same rationale that they use, you know. And it's scary.
And a lot of the medications, too, have side effects.
Oh,
so
yes.
If you have to come, you know, we have to deal with the side effects also. You might feel better, but the side effects, you're then taking more medications to counteract the side effects. So that's a problem. And then sometimes, too, like when you think about the bipolar disorder and you're hypomanic and you have all this energy and you're creative and you don't need to sleep and you're on the go all the time. And all of a sudden you're given medication and it's stabilizing you, but you lose all that energy. Well, and people, why would you want to do that? You know, you don't feel so good in
Demi
in
Lovato
your
used
mind.
To stay up all night long for days and write 4 or 5 songs a night. And she thought it was normal.
Yeah.
Now she happens to be a big advocate of letting people know about mental illness and what she's gone through and so on and so forth. But it's just, you know, it's right. It's the high, and why would you want to come down, you know?
Exactly.
And May is Mental Health Awareness Month. Why do you think it's important that people, the public, realize that it's mental health? Recognize it.
Well, I think that there's so many people that suffer, and because of the stigma attached to mental health issues, they don't seek out help. And making this Mental Health Awareness Month, and if I could put a plug in for the sure. Mental Health Forum that we're having next Monday night, May 23rd.
6:30 to 8:30
Mary Jo Cody. It's really to get the word out that mental health, mental illness is a disease, and that there is help to be had, and that there's nothing to be ashamed of. But getting people to the point where they can go and seek help rather than suffering silently is why it's so important.
And for those of you that don't know, Mary Jo Cody was the wife of the former governor, who was governor for, I don't know, a year or two.
Right, and they have a fund, and it's the Cody Fund. And it's committed to finding the will and the means to put aside fear, blame, punishment, and exclusion of individuals with mental illnesses and offering instead compassion, support, hope, and inclusion. And so we're really excited to have her. And
yes.
It's at Huntington Central, the compound. Not the compound. Commons. The Commons. Monday, May 23rd.
Of course, I don't know where the Commons is, but is
right
that
by the theater. Right around the corner from the little theater.
Yeah, you go out of the traffic light and make that right and get down? Yeah, okay.
Hey, think about it, Larry. When someone gets diagnosed with cancer, people are all around. The family comes walking, the neighbors are knocking, they're bringing the casseroles, they're taking care of anything else. When someone gets diagnosed with schizophrenia, you don't have people banging on your door saying, how can I help you? They're running the other way. Oh, is it okay for my child to be next to you? Can you be there? There's so much fear of the unknown. And there's the judgment, as Nancy said, and there's that's we
and
need
it's
to
very
make an
isolating. Awareness.
And you stop and think, like you were saying about the side effects. You take a 19, 20-year-old girl, and they put her on a medication, and she gains 70 pounds. You know, is she going to want to take that medication?
Right.
You know, I remember when my son, you know, my oldest son is like probably 6'3". I could stand behind him. You wouldn't see me, you know, because he's broad and And my next son down is just around 6 foot and fairly muscular. My youngest son is like 5'8", you know. And I forget what medication it was, but they put him on a medication, and he gained like 30, 40 pounds, almost 40 pounds. So it was 36, 37 pounds. And I mean, it's like, you know, his face blew up and everything. And we went to the doctor and said, you got to take him off of this. You know, this is ridiculous, you know. But it's true. And that's why a lot of times, well, I won't say all the time, but a lot of times people don't take medication or won't take medication because of the side effects. And it's a shame, you know. And unfortunately, they need the medication, you know. And unfortunately, it may be the only one that works, you know, which is the other problem, you know. But
there's also therapy. There's also, you know, individual. There's group therapy. There's other avenues for the person to possibly have other than medication or a medication to stabilize and then to work through whatever's going on with a therapist.
This young lady in California that has been on the radio with me twice, I think we talk on the phone, and one time she said she suffers from severe depression and bipolar. And she says, I don't take medication. I said, okay, what do you do? She says, well, I exercise a lot and I'm into holistic. I says, great. Does it work? She says, well, yeah, it does. Keep it up. She says, you're not going to tell me to stop and take medication? I said, well, first of all, I'm not a doctor, okay? That's number one. Number two, you do what works. If it works for you, fine. I will tell you this. You may down a road have to think about taking a medication if it ever stops working. But as long as it's working, do it. You know. I says, how do you exercise? She says, well, she says, I run, I don't know, 5-6 miles a day or something like that in the morning. And then she does a lot of these other stuff. And I says, fine, keep it up. do what you got to do if it's working.
And that's the thing. Not everything, not one single thing works for every single person.
Exactly.
It's so individualized, and they need to work with somebody to see what works for them.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's, you know, it's sad because, you know, people don't want to take medication. They have like a, there's like a stigma attached to the medication. They don't want to take it, you know, because, you know, oh God, I take my medication for my schizophrenia and now everybody will know I'm sick and I have this and that, you know. But unfortunately, if it works and it helps, you know, you got to take it, you know.
It's the same, you know, if you had diabetes, you might need to be on a medication your whole life to control the diabetes mm-hmm. in order to have a full life, you know, and that's sometimes hard for people who, sure. especially young people, to think about having a chronic illness that requires medication forever. You know, that's hard for them to reconcile. But eventually, sometimes you can reconcile that, and it helps you to then move on.
And, you know, and I don't want to say we were fortunate, but my son has been epileptic since he's 5. So he's been on medication since he's 5. So when he got into the psychotic phase with schizophrenia and was on had to be put on medication, he takes it religiously, but he wants to know what it's going to do, you know, why is we taking this and this and mixing it together, and which is fine, you know, ask the questions, you know, we support you 100%, ask any question you want, and once they, you know, he understands why they're doing it, then he'll take it, you know.
And you should know. I mean, sure. I think we don't ask enough questions about, you know, our medications right. and understanding what they're for, and I think making informed decisions, that's how you make informed decisions. The mm-hmm. more information I have helps me to do that.
And yeah, exactly.
It helped with your son's case, too, because he had supportive parents who could also help him. When you're feeling stable or logical, it makes sense. But when you're delusional or psychotic, even yeah. though it makes sense, you're not going to take the medication. You don't know. You may be paranoid. You're afraid to take medications. So the idea is to, once you're stabilized, to continue with that education, reinforcing, knowing what the warning signs are in case you do decompensate. Also so that your family or a support person can help you and say, you know what, you're not thinking right. You're doing a little bit of things differently. You're erratic. You know, some of those warning signs, and you do mm-hmm. that in advance so that when you're well, you know, that as you decompensate or things change, you can notice it, and you can get early intervention then.
All right. Two Central you were talking about earlier,
yes.
okay? Now, it's a voluntary inpatient unit. Why would someone be admitted there? Just so the public would know.
Okay. It is a voluntary unit, as you said. You would be there for if you were feeling depressed, suicidal, anxiety disorders, anything that will interfere with your daily functioning if you were jeopardy of thinking of harming yourself or maybe somebody else or property. So any kind of mental illness, doesn't matter.
But if you're thinking of harming yourself or someone else and the doctor puts you in Two Central, that's not voluntary then.
Yes, it is. You have a choice.
Okay.
You have a choice. You may be saying, gee, I'm thinking of harming myself, and I really don't want to go in the hospital. And if it's deemed, then you say, okay, I'm not going to go there. If it's determined that you're not safe, then you wouldn't be going to Two Central. Then it would not be voluntary.
Right, then
you
it
might
would
say,
be
you know
someplace
what?
Else.
Right, you would right. have to go to an involuntary place. But you might say, okay, I am suicidal. I want some help. I'm going to
okay.
go there. Now, once you get there, we would treat you, and it would be multidisciplinary. You'd see psychiatrists, APNs, advanced practice nurses. You would have medication, psychoeducation, psychotherapy, recreation, mm-hmm. et cetera. You would have all those things. You might be there and say, you know what, this isn't for me. I'm not going to be here. I don't want to stay. Again, if you were suicidal, we can't just let you walk out. You would be screened. You would be evaluated by the crisis workers, by the screeners, as well as the psychiatrist, and it would be determined whether you were safe or not. If you were safe, then you could be discharged. If not, or you might be signing out against medical advice. But if you're not safe, you were deemed that way, you would be transferred to another facility.
Right. Okay. I knew that. I just wanted to say.
But also, besides mental illness, we also do on 2 Central, they do alcohol and benzodiazepine, which is tranquilizers like Valium, Xanax, Klonopin. They do detox there.
Right.
So you can be admitted on the unit for that also.
Now, addiction. We have a program at the hospital for addiction. Correct?
We have lots of programs at the hospital for addiction.
You want to elaborate on some of them?
Yes. I will be glad to do that. We have individual therapy for addiction. We have lots of groups. We have an evening intensive outpatient program, which is 3 evenings a week plus individual counseling. That's one of the programs. We also have another program which is part of the acute partial hospital program, which is it's called Acute Addictions Intervention Program, ABCs. That is 5 days a week based on medical necessity, and it can be up to 3 weeks of time where you would go for that treatment. I really like that program in the fact that it deals with the addictions and substance abuse. Also, you see advanced practice nurse or psychiatrist as well as being in groups. But if you have a co-occurring illness, suppose you're depressed or anxious, we can put you in a full-day program where you're also being that's also being addressed. You may be there, go to the program also for depression, and you're abusing substances. Maybe you're not addicted, but you're drinking a little bit too much, or you're dabbling with pot. Again, like as you said, to relieve some of those symptoms, we can put you. The program is tailored that you could be for mental illness, but we can provide education for substance abuse.
Okay.
So it's really a nice thing. And then what a lot of times will happen is someone will go on 2 Central, whether it's for mental illness or for substance abuse. They'll be discharged, and they always have a discharge plan. Many times they're referred to that program, to the acute addictions or acute partial hospital program. They're there for 2 to 3 weeks, maybe sometimes a little bit longer, and then they would be transitioned into the evening IOP, which will go for another several weeks. So you have a lot of treatment. And then again, after that, you can also be involved with psychiatrists or APNs or psychotherapy in addition to that.
Now, the plan that when they get discharged from 2 Central, is that mandatory they go to?
Voluntary.
Yeah, all voluntary.
It's voluntary,
right?
Just like on there. And that's part of the problem, Larry, as you know, that you've seen people who've come and, they're there for the 5 days is the average length of stay, and then a month later they're back again. Because you can't make people go. You can't make them go to treatment.
No,
and that's
you sure can take them back again and again, which we saw over and over again, It's like one of them I remember very well. He even knew my name. He got to know my name. Oh, hi, Larry, I'm back. Mm-hmm. How are you?
And that's frustrating, but at the same time, we're there to give hope.
Right.
It's like anything else. You may have to fall a lot of times before you get the message and say, maybe I need to do something different now. Maybe they really know what they're talking about.
Maybe the fifth time something clicks
no,
and
true.
Says, I don't want to be back here again. I need to make changes.
Yeah. No, it's true. Now, you have inpatient services, right? So what would they offer for mental illness?
Like outpatient or
outpatient,
inpatient?
Inpatient.
Say inpatient.
Okay, for inpatient, it would be the psychotherapy.
Psychotherapy that you used, right?
Right. Medication monitoring. They have team meetings.
Okay.
Yeah.
Pretty much the norm for...
That's the norm for everybody.
Right,
and there's at least 3 or 4 groups per day.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they're not mandatory, but strongly encouraged. They have a family education group in the evening time also with patient group, which is nice because, again, families don't know what's going on and they want to know. And with confidentiality, you can't say a whole lot without patients. You can't say anything without the patient's release of information or consent. We can give general information, but nothing specific. Dovetail to that, we have the intensive family support services that Nancy oversees, and we can refer family members to that, which is really nice because then it gives them the education of what's going on with their family member. Not specifics, but again, how do I handle somebody? How do I deal with someone who's suicidal? How do I deal with somebody who's depressed? What do I do? What do I say? Because it's really important for the families or significant others, which is really a good thing to do.
You can talk about that, Nancy.
Well, the Intensive Family Support Services works very closely with 2 Central. We also work closely with the emergency services, trying to help people right when they're in the middle of that crisis, to engage families, to let families know what services are available to them through Hunter Behavioral Health, but also what's available in the community. So we want people to know about NAMI. We want people to know about other services. And the referrals can come from anywhere. It's not necessary that a person be on 2C to have families involved in intensive family support services. They could be from the community. It's word of mouth. We refer people to NAMI. NAMI refers
people to our
IFSS program, and they really provide support and education, and they meet individuals wherever they want. And surprisingly, a lot of people enjoy meeting in the community. I think part of it is because mental illness for a family can also be very isolating. And meeting a counselor in the community at a local coffee shop or whatever, it has this sense of meeting a friend almost. So there's something normalizing about that. And people really do enjoy that. We also meet people at our offices and in their homes.
Right.
You know, really, it's, again, I think one of the things about all of our services are they are so individualized. There isn't a one fits all. It's really seeing what are the family's needs? What's the individual's needs? How do we help them in any way?
Now, a lot of times police will bring in somebody that's either driving under the influence or using drugs or whatever and got picked up by the police. When the police bring them into the emergency room, what then is the process? Then they have the screener come and screen them, or how does that work?
Well, they first have to be medically clear.
Right.
So first they're examined and they're seen, they're triaged, they're seen by a nurse first, and then they're seen by a physician to make sure that they're medically stable and to see what else is going on with them, because it may appear that they're drunk or under the influence, and it might be a medical condition that's actually going on, or they're psychotic. Mm-hmm. And, again, something else could be a urinary tract infection, especially like in the elderly. So they'll make sure that they're medically cleared. And then once that happens, then they would be seen by a crisis counselor, and they would be evaluated of what's going on with them. Do they need to be hospitalized or don't? Many people come to the ED and they don't get it hospitalized. Right. They go home, there's family members, or they have a safe plan and they can go home. If not, then they come in. If it's medically necessary, for if they're intoxicated and they're going to go into withdrawal or have any seizures or problems like that, then they would be hospitalized. And we would detox them on 2 Central. And then in addition to what we were talking about, the medications, they would be monitored, their vital signs for any kinds of signs of withdrawal. They would be getting the education in all the groups. And we also have AA volunteers who come on the unit, and they have meetings several times a week. So that's another service that they would have there.
Yeah, I know they have AA meetings on Friday, you know, at something like, 12 o'clock
and also
to 1
on
or
Wednesday
something.
Nights.
Yeah. Well, I'm not usually there on Wednesday nights, but I'm there on Friday, so I see it. Because ironically, I know a couple of people that go, you know. Because like when I'm volunteering, they'll come in early. Oh, hi, Larry, how are you? You know, and I'll talk to them, and, you know, we'll talk. And they'll look, you know where I'm going? Yeah, I know where you're going. Go ahead, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's you run into different people at different stages, and, you know.
Right.
That's how I meet them a lot of times, too, you know, because of family to family or support groups or whatever, you know. It's, you know, I find it very rewarding, for lack of a better word, that we offer a lot of services, a lot of different services. Now, I know a couple people who are being, was it counseled, for lack of a better word, for IFSS.
Mm-hmm.
And I know them because they go to our support groups, and I know them because they've taken the family-to-family class. And not only I know them, but Priscilla knows them also, my wife. And they can't say enough about the people that they're meeting, you know, with how well they handle their situation and how they're helping them get through various problems and so on and so forth, which is great.
Right.
You know, which is really wonderful, you know. And it's just this one woman said to me, "Gee, do you know such and such?" I says, "Yeah, I know her very well." You know, she's, "Oh, she's awesome, you know. She just is great, you know." And I said, "Well, you know," I says, "you know, she's got been there a while, you know, and she knows what she's talking about." And, you know, she's, "Oh, she's helped such a great deal, you know." And other people said the same thing, you know. And
I think we're very, very fortunate. I am very fortunate to have amazing people working with me and working, you know, with Chris. And I think that the people that work in intensive family support understand what families are going through. And again, how isolating it is. And mm-hmm. how often families feel that they're looked at as it's their fault. Yeah. You know, and the support groups are amazing. Amazing. The peer support that people are given, and you have somebody who maybe is at the beginning of this journey and somebody who's in the middle of it, being able to provide them with support and suggestions and hope.
Right.
I mean, I think the biggest thing is the idea that there is hope.
I've always found it easier to solve somebody else's problem than my own.
Me too, Larry. You're not alone.
It's always easier to say, "Well, why don't you try this?" You know, and I'll come out, "Oh, that was great." You know, and I'm like, "Well, that's great. I'm glad it worked for you." And I'm thinking to myself, "Why the hell did it work for me?" You know, but it's just like it's. I guess it's easier, you know, to deal with other people's problems. You know what I mean? Then, because I know him. My son first got ill, I would have done anything, but I didn't want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. You know, Priscilla would say, you know, if she wanted to talk about it, I'd go in the other room, read a book, or I'd get in the car, go down to a truck stop and get coffee. I didn't want to talk about it, you know, and this went on for about 6 years. And then she drugged me to intensive family support services.
I remember those early days,
and
Larry.
What was the lady's name that was
Pat.
There? Pat. Yeah. Okay. I couldn't think of her name. It went out of my head. I can picture her, but exactly what she looks like and everything, but I couldn't think of her name. And and Priscilla drugged me there.
And now you're the biggest advocate.
Well, I won't say the biggest advocate,
no,
but you know,
very strong.
Yeah,
advocate.
Very, very yeah. strong advocate.
But you know, it's just everybody has to deal with it in their own way. You know. And like I said, I'd have robbed a bank. Short of killing somebody, I would have done just about anything to help my son. But I just couldn't. You know, people will ask, "Oh, how's the family? Oh, Paul's doing this. Scott's doing that. Sherry's doing this." You know, everybody's fine.
And how's Larry?
Not so much me, but how's Mark, my son?
I know, but I'm just saying, but again, it's not only the patient. It's the family and everybody else involved. And as you said, you would do anything to take care of your son, but it was also impacting you.
Sure.
You were probably shutting down, not talking, whatever, however else. It took you 6 years to go and talk to somebody else
6 years.
About it. Yeah. Just, you know, again, so it's easier, as you said, to take care of other people than do for yourself. I mean, and if you're not a person who normally would ask for help, what's the chance of you actually picking up the phone and saying, "Help me"? It's really hard.
It's true.
You know, it's hard.
No,
but
it
is true.
It is.
You know.
And there's people that, you know, they too have to come to terms with what's happening, and it makes it difficult. We had a group a couple of weeks ago talking to a mom and dad who they want, trying to get their son, who's probably in his 50s at this point, who won't acknowledge that he has any mental health issues. And, you know, we're giving them all different suggestions. And I said to them, maybe you're not ready. And he said, maybe I'm not ready.
Mm.
You know, and everybody comes to it at different times.
Yeah, it's just, I know my way of dealing with it was kind of morbid, actually, when you think about it. It really was. I had a funeral in my head. And I had a son, and he died. And I pictured him in my mind in the casket. Now I have another son, and he's got schizophrenia. And I'll do anything I can to help him and support him. And, you know, but that was my way of dealing with it. As morbid as it sounds, that was my way of dealing with it.
Because you wanted to see your son live and have a life. And you loved him.
And Pat, she didn't tell me to do that in my head, but you know, she gave me whatever it works, whatever, you know, you can do to make it work, you know, et cetera. And that's what worked. So on that glad note, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Hunterdon Medical Center Hour, and we will be back in just a moment.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Hi, I'm Pat Smits, Law Offices of Patricia Garrity Smits, LLC. The Hunterdon Chamber is a great resource to find the best local business people and meet new friends.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program, no drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
At Crown Trophy of Flemington, we have thousands of products for you to choose from. Whether you're looking for trophies, plaques, or corporate awards, Crown Trophy of Flemington is your one-stop shop. We feature acrylic and crystal awards and promotional products for any occasion. We build and engrave all awards right on site. And we're a leading supplier of varsity jackets for local sports teams. We provide quality customer service and great pricing. Crown Trophy of Flemington is conveniently located in the Staples Shopping Center in Flemington. Crown Trophy of Flemington, we're trophies and a whole lot more.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Hunterdon Medical Center Hour. Compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. I'm your host, Larry Cartwright, and we are very privileged today to have with us Nancy Remore and Christine Cochran, who are from the Hunterdon Medical Center. Nancy's with the intensive family support services, and
community outreach.
Community outreach. Well, that falls under that, doesn't it? Or doesn't it?
It falls under community outreach.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So there you go. You know. And Chris, you're all over the place.
So. That I am.
But basically, what specifically do you handle?
It's acute services. So anyone who is in any acute crisis, so that was before was inpatient unit, because obviously that people are very acutely ill at that time.
Right.
The acute partial program, which I said is, again, where we're looking at people, it's usually based episode related. People are in crisis. We expect that patients will stabilize probably within 2 to 3 weeks, and if not, they would be extended longer, another treatment. The adolescent program, which we have an intensive IOP, which is 4 days a week, so, and it includes families, also family group, which mm-hmm. Which is a really good thing. Again, to prevent, a lot of the kids will come in, they're ages 12 to 18, they've already been hospitalized, so it's either for that or to prevent hospitalization.
Right.
So they're acutely ill for all different kinds of reasons with that. And then, of course, the addictions program. And mm-hmm. we have a lot, early intervention and all the other different programs and groups that are involved with that.
Right. One of the things that is a sad part of all this is the second leading cause of death on college campuses is suicide. And when that guy comes around to the high school classes to talk to them about his college or her college, they don't mention that, mm-hmm. you know. But it is. And one of the biggest myths is that if you think someone is contemplating suicide, don't ask them about it because that'll force them to do it. Well, that is so much bull that, for lack of a better word, a lot of times they just want to talk about it. Now, do you find you get a lot of suicidal people that...
Yes, a lot of it. It's a 10th cause, a leading cause of death in the United States, suicide. Right. And that's a lot. Probably about 56% of the people do not get any treatment. So you don't even know. I mean, it would be nice if you asked the question, how are you feeling? Are you suicidal? I even find that in nursing in general. You know, working behavioral health, that's not a question that frightens me. I feel comfortable asking somebody if they're suicidal. Nursing, a lot of times, people don't feel comfortable saying, you know, you're thinking about death, you're thinking about harming yourself. Just you said, you're afraid you might trigger something.
Right.
You're not.
They want
to talk. And we even see that they'll come into the emergency room and they're suicidal. By the time they walk, we talk almost like the magic carpet, by the time they get from the ED to 2 Central, they're not suicidal anymore. They've already talked to a crisis counselor. They've been evaluated. They've talked a long time. They've seen doctors. They've seen nurses. They come on the unit. They feel more comfortable about talking about it, and which is really very helpful. So you're not going to trigger anything. If anything else, maybe you can prevent something.
Right.
You're there. Also, to one of the times that you have to be leery about is when people are being discharged, when they're feeling better. Sometimes they're so depressed when they're suicidal, they don't have the energy to kill themselves. But now they're starting to feel a little bit
better. Exactly.
And they say, he's wonderful, she's wonderful, they're doing really great. And that's like they're already thinking. So really we want to assess very carefully. But again, if someone wants to kill themselves, you know that they're going to do that. The other part of it is, again, with the substance abuse, if that's a depressant, you're going to be more likely to commit suicide if you're using. You have a better chance. It lowers your inhibitions. You're already feeling depressed. It makes you more depressed. And you also figure people are better off without you. What do I have to live for? Or you can do something impulsively. You know, when you're sober, mm-hmm. you're not thinking about it. All of a sudden, you know, you're drinking, you're using, you take, a few pills. It hasn't worked yet. You take some more. That's where it gets to be much more lethal. And sometimes people accidentally kill themselves. They don't mean to do that, but they do. And so it's really something that we really have to be aware of because with mental illness. And sometimes the pain is so difficult. Or, again, you may be psychotic. You're not thinking about killing yourself. You're just trying to run away from what's in your head. You run into traffic. So inadvertently, again, that's not suicide, but you still get killed, you know?
Yeah, it's, we know somebody who called, well, she called Priscilla, and her son had just got out 3 days before, got out of rehab in Florida, and he was there for like 6 months in this rehab mm-hmm. place. And he came back, and he was home for 3-4 days. And one night, she woke up in the morning, and she just knocked on his door, and he wasn't there. The bed wasn't slept in. So she said, oh, he's out, you know, stayed out all night, you know. And she went in the backyard to do something, and he was hanging from a tree in the backyard.
My God.
And she, while he was hanging, while the cops and everybody was there, she called Priscilla. And it's like, what do you say? You know, it's like... It's just so sad, you know, and know somebody, a family who their son was straight A student, class valedictorian, you know, class president, I guess it was, and, you know, captain of the soccer team and all this. And he had scholarships to a couple different colleges, and they had no clue. And he just killed himself. About 3-4 weeks later, they found a note that was buried, you know, in his room somewhere when they were getting to clean it out. And he just couldn't face going to college and the pressure of being straight A student and all that. And he didn't want to go to college.
And a lot of times people looking back will have seen signs.
Yeah.
But that's why it's so important about the awareness is about taking this out of the shadows, that suicide is a permanent, you know, that old phrase, it's a permanent solution to a temporary problem.
Right.
It's getting the word out about that there is help, that
yep.
there are people to talk to, that families should be observant and talking to loved ones and having that ability to seek help. Because so many people don't go and seek help. And they're suffering. They're suffering terribly. Can
mm-hmm.
you? I mean, it's just horrible suffering that they're doing alone. When they can, if we get more awareness that it's okay to reach out for help, mm-hmm. just like you would for
right.
any other illness, then we have a fighting chance of fighting this epidemic
mm-hmm.
of suicide. Now, they just did something at Huntington Central with mental health awareness, you know, having a table out and having literature out. The more we could get the word out for how to seek help, how to help your friend if you see signs for your friend or a loved one, the more we can do that, the more that people's awareness increases, the better off
sure.
our chances
absolutely.
Are.
Absolutely.
Many times I've talked to people afterwards, after they made an attempt, and they've said they didn't want to die. They wanted the pain to stop, and
right.
they knew no other way to do it.
Right.
And, again, you're in this black hole, and you almost like you have blinders on. You don't see anything in front of you, anything else, any
mm-hmm.
other options, and that's your only solution that they have. And for the most part, the majority of people were very thankful. They were grateful they didn't die and they weren't successful and they worked, you know, hard. Some people still, no matter what, they still don't see anything different, or the pain is so intense of a lifetime
sure.
of pain.
Absolutely.
Suffering and, you know, so,
there was a young man that jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge and he did a 5-minute video. He's one of the very few survivors who jumped off and survived. But the video shows him in a, you know, in a bus, crying the whole time in the bus. And the bus finally comes to its last stop, and he's at the doorway, and the bus driver says, "Get off the bus, it's my last stop." And he's crying. And he goes out onto the bridge, and he says in the video, just one person would have stopped and asked me and started talking to me. He says, "Oh, yeah, one person did. They asked me to take their picture." He says, "And I jumped." He says, "I survived. I don't know how, but I survived." And now he goes around talking to mm-hmm. people, you know, about. But, you know, it's just, you see somebody like that crying, you say, "You all right?" Nobody said anything. He says there was like 10, 15 people on a bus and nobody said a word.
And all it takes is that
one. All I would have said, he said, if somebody would have just asked me.
And a lot of times people do come to the emergency room feeling suicidal, but they're reaching out for the help.
Right. Right.
And so they know that this is a thought they have, and they want somebody to help them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they reach out. You call the crisis line, or you come into the emergency room and be able to talk to somebody rather than acting on it.
Right. Is there a phone number if somebody wanted to make an appointment with behavioral health, or either one of you? Ooh. Is there a phone number that they could reach out, or is there an email address, or both maybe you could give?
Well, first of all, the one thing that Nancy was saying about coming into the emergency room, we do have the behavioral health emergency crisis line.
Right.
And that number is 908-788-6400. So anybody can call. So again, if you're thinking about, life isn't worth living, or you're struggling with depression or any anxiety you're using, you can always use that number. That's a crisis number, and that is manned 24/7. And there is somebody
and
there who can help
908-688-6400.
Correct. Now, The other, if you wanted to make an appointment to be assessed for treatment, that you would call the access number, and that's 908-788-6401, prompt number 4. And then you would call and say what you're looking for, what kind of services. An appointment would be made for you. You would be assessed through the Access Center. And then based on that, either you would be going to individual outpatient therapy, maybe to one of the programs for addiction services, mm-hmm. adolescent programs. But they steer you that way, and then you would be going to that treatment.
So you're always seen by in the Access Center, a licensed professional who will do an intake, take all your information, find out your history, what is going on for you. And then based upon that, you may think you need A, and it may be that you actually need something more intensive.
Right.
Or you may feel you need something more intensive, but you may just need outpatient. But it's kind of the gateway into our system.
Right.
And so it's one stop, and then you go to either outpatient or the addiction services or the acute partial program, and also they have a APN that works with them.
Well, I want to thank you both, ladies, for being here. It's been a pleasure, and I really appreciate the work you do, and it's all about trying to help people, and, even sometimes if they don't realize they need help, and that's unfortunate, but that's the way it is. But
so can I make one more pitch?
You sure can.
Okay.
If you do it quick.
So May 23rd, Monday, May 23rd at 6:30. And then in June, Jersey Mike's, the Subway place, Jersey Mike's Subs. Is having a fundraiser June 14th and 15th. There's going to be these coupons out. If you donate $3 to Hunter Behavioral Health, you get a free sub.
Wow. Well, I'm going to have to donate $3.
June 14th and 15th, Jersey Mike's.
And we'll be there if you have any questions.
All right. Very good. Thank you, ladies, both again.
Thank
I appreciate
Larry.
It.
Thank you, Larry.
Nice seeing you both again. You've been listening to the Hunter Medical Center's Hour, and they will be back again next week, same time, same station. Have a good week.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
USA Radio. with Audrey Strong.
They told me several times, and my manager several times, that it would not be a hit piece, and that my story would come across the way that I was telling it, and honestly, and it absolutely was not.
Roanne Brewer Lane talking about the New York Times article claiming Donald Trump has a history of questionable behavior with women. The article quotes women, including Brewer Lane, who relate incidents when Trump allegedly treated them as sexual objects or made comments about their bodies. Speaking to Fox News, Brewer Lane says she was misquoted and her words were twisted.
I don't know how many other girls feel like they were misquoted, but I know that for a fact I was.
Brewer Lane insists she's never known the likely Republican presidential nominee to have treated women inappropriately. The New York Times says it stands by its story. This is USA Radio News.
At GEICO, we've been innovating car insurance for over 75 years with forward-thinking ideas like online quotes and the GEICO mobile app.